Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're back in the Billy Meyer case information, back with the might of thoughts. Automatic thoughts. One of the biggest problems that we face is what we could call problem-causing thoughts that function somewhat automatically. We tend to narrow our frame of reference and focus on these thoughts over and over again. So we need to learn to break the cycle of automatic thought and recognize when we fall prey to these automatic thoughts. Remember, your consciousness is kind of like a garden. If you allow these automatic thoughts to pop up, they can choke out all the good thoughts that you can have. Problem-causing thoughts and the evaluations and the feelings which arise from them, which are unconsciously tended and nurtured and which operate automatically and throw the psyche into turmoil. It is these automatic thoughts which are the crucial point, because it is through them that the feelings are disturbed and thereby also the psyche. That little passage comes from page 120 from the book The Might of Thoughts. And interesting thing happens when these turmoil-based thoughts, when they circulate in your psyche, something that happens sometimes is that your feelings and your thoughts get out of sync. In other words, you know you should do a certain thing, but your feeling is that you don't want to. So you have this kind of weird inner conflict that occurs. And this can lead to all kinds of psychological problems. So one thing that you can do is check when your feelings are getting disturbed, because these disturbing feelings are a sign that you have entered into a kind of thinking that's not good for the psyche. Each time these repeating thoughts move through the mind, they generate more disturbing feelings. So the key here is to break the pattern of uncontrolled automatic thoughts. This can be done through meditation, focusing on something else, listening to music, or going out into nature. The problem is these repeating negative thoughts, they tend to narrow our focus, and they distort our perception of reality. And the problem-causing thoughts, they tend to become a bad habit that we will repeat over and over again. These thoughts create a distortion of reality and it can lead to depression. We can start thinking about these problems unconsciously. And that's the big thing here that I'm still trying to really appreciate, is a lot of these thoughts, unwanted thoughts, they come up unconsciously. Just like emotions that erupt suddenly, these thoughts can be unconscious. And we all have problems in our life that can generate this kind of automatic, unconscious thinking. It's amazing that we actually think. The unconscious actually thinks. We need to examine which conscious or unconscious attitudes are causing our behavior problems. This is challenging because the conscious or unconscious ideas are not always immediately recognized. Sometimes it can be helpful to even create a diary of thoughts and feelings. Some of these unconscious thoughts can actually move into the conscious mind. They slowly become conscious. You slowly, through systematic self-observation, start seeing that these unconscious thoughts are coming to the surface. These problematic thoughts, they again, can lead to distortions of reality. And as a rule, they start out in an unconscious manner. So that's the struggle that we have here. And these lower thoughts, they form lower feelings, they form lower habits, lower circumstances in your life. You can fall into things like alcoholism, hate, anger, which we talked about last week, grief, bitterness, errors of judgment, and many kinds of suffering. You can get into suffering from these operating automatic thoughts. And when these automatic thoughts get rolling, they can crystallize into confusion, and you'll feel exhausted. And these circumstances can be very difficult to control because these are habits. These are regular tendencies or practices. And you have to recognize when you're starting to go into these automatic habitual thoughts. And they can affect our health. You know, good thoughts and lead to good feelings. Feelings are supposed to come from thoughts, and you should never oppress those feelings. You should allow those feelings to develop. And the two should be in sync, the thoughts and the feeling. And the good feelings will lead to good habits and lead to good circumstances in your life. But the cycle of these negative repeating thoughts can really disturb the whole psyche. What happens is when you have thoughts, they discharge through feelings. And the feelings discharge their energy in the psyche. And the psyche discharges its energy into the body. So that's how that works. And that's a normal, healthy pattern. The might of the thoughts are able to determine even our physical well-being. And the majority of human health problems have their roots solely in their thinking. And anxiety and fear continually kill thousands of human beings. Demoralizing thoughts. That's another way to check these repeating thoughts, these automatic thoughts. Are they demoralizing? Are they inspiring you to do more work, or are they leading you to give up? Wrong thoughts of every kind, they affect the nervous system. Your nervous system can be traumatized by your own thinking. Neutral, positive, equalized, healthy, and happy thoughts will build up your resistance, while those negative thoughts will shake your whole nervous system and they'll undermine your health. It can affect your appearance. Most people don't steer their thoughts. And these unhealthy, wrong, negative, and destructive thoughts can lead to illnesses, disease. They can lead to the immune system becoming impaired. But if your thoughts are constructive, beautiful, positive, happy, and equalized, then the psyche can also be in a very positive state. And remember that we are under the mantra, so to speak, to live and help live. So we should be helping others to live. And if you are magnanimous, if you're generous, if you're forgiving, if you're helping others, animals, plants, people, then you're going to be actually aided in some way by creation itself. So we can't let our thoughts drift on the ocean of life. We have to take helm and steer the ship of our thinking. And it's good, we should have optimism. And if you feel yourself moving away from optimism, then your thoughts are not correct. Real optimism is a good thing for human beings to have. It's a good way to keep your body healthy, to keep your psyche healthy. Optimism is hopefulness and confidence about the future. Synonyms include cheerfulness, hopefulness. Optimism is a mental attitude. It's a worldview. Optimism seems to have an effect on our health. Put simply, optimists tend to emerge from difficult circumstances with less distress than do pessimists. It's a coping style. And if you're an optimist and you can attack your problems head on, you're more likely to have success. And optimistic behavior helps a human being to see the real truth, the clear truth, even in a bad situation. So optimism is very important, and it represents a quality which actually can fascinate other people. If you're optimistic, especially today, that will get people's attention. People are not used to seeing optimists. Optimism is a very healthy thing. Now, that doesn't mean you have to fall into belief. Belief is something that has a very strong hypnotic effect, and it can lead into fanaticism and illogic. But you still can hold on to optimism. There's nothing wrong with some belief, I do believe, but hypnosis, it's a state of human consciousness involving focused attention. But the problem with this hypnotic state that belief produces, it reduces your peripheral awareness, and it leads you to become very open to suggestion. And what happens is, when you're in a hypnotic state, you can become a fanatic. You can be uncritical enthusiasm towards something. You see it in religion. So the Meyer Information says that belief is based on a wrong and negative thinking, a rejection and displacement of reality, whereby every believer is restricted in the creation of new and progressive ideas. Remember, independent thinking is what allows your consciousness to evolve. The whole purpose of our time in the material is to evolve our consciousness. Now, we have a material consciousness and a spiritual consciousness. The spiritual consciousness has a block called the Gemut, which controls our thoughts and feelings associated with spiritual consciousness. The psyche is in the material realm. The psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. Your spiritual consciousness is what lasts forever. Your material consciousness dies and you get a new one with each lifetime. Now, here's a bit of a puzzle that I don't have all the answers for yet, that the spiritual consciousness is not completely conscious. It's not completely aware. Your spiritual consciousness will not become completely conscious until all of your reincarnations are over and you finally merge back to the universal consciousness. This is after many, many millions and millions of years. But there's really the spiritual consciousness. Our spirit form comes into the body of the child at 21 days. The spirit form goes into this area in the mid-lower brain called the superior colliculus. The spirit form sends its energy throughout the whole body, kind of like a web of energy. And it also brings in with it something called the material consciousness. Because each time you reincarnate, you get a new personality. But deep within your subconscious is the memory of and the wisdom of your predecessor personalities. So you'll get inspired by these predecessor personalities. You'll receive impulses from the universal consciousness, from the storage banks of the universal consciousness. Because the universal consciousness, which we erroneously call God, the universal consciousness creates spirit forms to help it evolve. So you kind of go out from the universal consciousness as an independent entity, and you're really kind of responsible for yourself. The purpose of all of these many lifetimes is to create this wisdom, to evolve your consciousness, and eventually you bring back all that experience to the universal consciousness. So we really need to learn personal responsibility. We really need to learn these thinking skills. And learning to control our thoughts is the key to having good, positive circumstances in our life, and it's the key to the evolution of the consciousness. Now, one of the pitfalls that we can fall into is unsatisfaction. The truth of the existence of human unsatisfaction, namely, lies entirely elsewhere, indeed in the human being himself or herself, who produces it through unfulfillable and unreal ideas, which he can never bring to full expression. He can also never develop into ideas capable of realization. So that's one of the keys. If you fall, unsatisfaction is very devastating and destructive. You want to make sure you don't fall into unsatisfaction. Unsatisfaction can lead to terrible unproductivity. But the key here is you have to set realistic goals. If you set unrealistic goals, then you can fall into unsatisfaction. If you have unrealistic desires, you know, it can lead to this devastating state. Devastating means that something's highly destructive, highly damaging. So unsatisfaction is very destructive. And I think we all have the tendency to fall into that at times. So, and it says on page 280 of the Mind of Thoughts that unsatisfaction is unable to create any ideas or any balance of the personality. Remember balance, because the universal consciousness is balanced. It's only slightly balanced towards the positive. It's mostly completely neutral. And we need to try to work on being neutral about all things. So if you have certain thought patterns that aren't neutral, they will make you, they'll create disturbed feelings. And you need to evaluate your feelings. Now, one of the great thinkers of the past was Plato. He was a philosopher, he was a mathematician. He lived around the 4th century B.C., classical Greek. And he asserted that there were non-material abstract ideas and that the material world that we live in was somehow influenced by these abstract ideas. And he had certain premises. Plato said that we should think carefully and logically about how we should lead our lives, and that we shouldn't let our emotions drag you along. And that's one of the important things to remember, that emotions erupt suddenly and sometimes unconsciously. And be aware of these emotions. Now, feelings follow your thoughts. And feelings normally evolve from thoughts. Now, Plato was an interesting character because Plato described Atlantis. And there's a video out there called Legend of Atlantis on YouTube. It's something you might want to see. And I've talked about the story of Atlantis and Lemuria. It's discussed in detail in Contact 59. Atlantis and Lemuria was the civilization that existed before ours. They had very high technologies. These people came from other worlds. There were already human beings on the Earth, but these people from Atlantis and Lemuria, they settled on an island continent called Atlantis. Their leader was called Atlant, and they flourished for thousands and thousands of years. And there was also another city that we call Mu today, or Lemuria, and it formed in what is now the Gobi Desert, but at that time I don't think it was a desert. And they had two underground cities, Agartha Alpha and Agartha Beta. And eventually these two great cities went into war against each other. And interestingly, this war, you could probably say, was based on people not being able to control their thinking. And in many ways, the Atlanteans as well as the Lemurians became unsatisfied with various things. Now, unsatisfaction kills off initiative. It will kill off your ability to strive for things which are higher. And it allows and causes people to sink into a brooding misery and inactivity. You know, I think this brooding misery is something that's probably very common in the third millennium. You know, Billy talked about the third millennium with Sfoth. Sfoth told him that in 1945, when we dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that we entered into the third millennium. And one of the predictions is that in the third millennium, people will become indolent, they'll become obtuse, they'll be indifferent, they'll be hypnotized. Hypnotized, there will be very little independent thinking. And what happened is a military tyranny formed at the time of the Roman Empire, and it was transferred to the Roman Catholic Church, which created a conscience-based tyranny, a tyranny of thinking. And it's very interesting that here in the modern world, again, through political correctness, they're reestablishing this tyranny of our mind. It's a tyranny of thought. And one of the things that tyranny does is oversaturate your consciousness. Now, when you're oversaturated, your consciousness is oversaturated. And it happens by repeating ads, repeating music. Everything repeats. Everything seems the same. You're oversaturated. You got all this information, but no meaning. Okay? Now, once the consciousness is oversaturated in some form, for example, with unsatisfaction, the human being is not able to master his or her life. He's not able to achieve anything in this oversaturated state. Wrong thinking can lead to oversaturation. We're in a society that intentionally oversaturates us, and that causes an absence of creativity, a lack of ideas, a lack of initiative. And that's why people become indifferent and they're obtuse. They don't even want to think. You know, in this unsatisfaction, it kills off the motivation. It kills off the creativity. But if you can consciously steer your life through steering your thoughts, you can avoid these pitfalls. And one of the things we have to do is avoid being submissive. We can be respectful of authority, but not submissive. You don't turn over your thoughts. And the Meyer information says, dare to execute reason. Therefore, also never lapse into submissiveness with regard to a human, regardless of however and whatever he may pretend to be, but also never thus become submissive, a submissive slave to any imaginary deity, any angels, any saints, or anything else. Never practice submissiveness with regard to yourself, but be open and honest and forceful, and regard yourself as a human, which you truly are, who governs respect for himself. One of the traps is submissiveness. So you can be humble without being weak. You can be respectful of authority without being submissive. Don't guide your thoughts into gloomy pictures. Everything that you conceive can bear fruit. Whenever doubts surface in any form, they must simply be treated as that which they are, obstacles. Obstacles towards your development of something higher. Everything that the human being ever conceives, the ideas, the imaginations, your efforts can ultimately bear fruit. If you have a thought can lead to a wish. If you nurture that thought, it can build a consciousness picture. If you add enthusiasm to that thought, it can lead to reality. You know, I notice that when my thoughts are not correct, I get into a kind of indecisiveness. But purely thought-based feeling or emotional love is not what we're looking for here. You know, the world talks about love, but when the Meyer material talks about love, we're talking about something different here. We're not talking about indecision. We're not talking about instability. Love is a very stable thing. And when you start to understand the thinking based on love is stability. It's based on observation. It's based on an internal peace. You know, you'll attract, if you have true magnanimous, true love, you will attract animals, plants, you'll attract people. And we need to have love because love is the primary creational natural law. And it's the primary law of creation, not affective love, but effective love. Love that's based on observation, love that's based on understanding that we are connected to all things. You know, if you can learn to feel your connectedness to all things, you will feel a great peace. I think nature releases the kind of impulses. And nature is very, very relaxing. That's why I like these nature sounds. Let's listen again to nature, and I'll pick back up with the second part of the show this evening. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Spent the first half an hour of the show talking about Billy's book, The Might of Thoughts. It's such a useful book. Recently, I got the Goblet of Truth bound, and now I have some 600-plus page book I'm going to have to go through in detail. Yesterday evening, I talked with Glenn Steckling, and I didn't get to cover as much information as I really wanted to about the flying Vimanas. We talked about Desmond Leslie, who was one of the friends of George Adamski. He was a British pilot, a filmmaker, and Desmond Leslie got very interested in the Vedic writings of India. And I talked about the flying machines that were called the Vimanas, and he also talked about Atlantis and Lemuria, which the Meyer information talks about as well. And Desmond mentioned a book written by Scott Elliott that mentions these ancient flying machines that were circular, much like the discs that are sometimes spotted today at night. You could see that these ships glowed in the dark, and they're said to move very quickly on free energy. And the ancient Vedic writings call them the Vimanas. I have another guest named Henry Kroll, who actually ordered a book from the Sanskrit Institute at Mysore, India. The book is called Vamanika Shastra, and it has diagrams of these ships. One particular diagram that Henry talks about shows metal pipes that three metal pipes that kind of snake up around a central column. And what they would do is they would pump mercury into these pipes and then rotate these pipes. And they would be rotated at a very high speed. Mercury is extremely heavy. It's incredibly heavy. I forget exactly the weight of it. But when you rotate this mercury in these pipes, it creates a tremendous centrifugal force. It creates like anti-gravity effects. It creates a time field. And in the ancient past, we had these very advanced crafts flying around. It's interesting. In the Sanskrit, Vimana can mean to measure out, to transverse. One Sanskrit scholar defines Vimana as a car or chariot of the gods. But the word Vimana can also mean temple. I think I have a bit of poetry here from an ancient Vedic writing called Ramayana. Let me read this. I'll try to read this to you. It talks about the Pushpaka Vimana that resembles the sun, and it belongs to the brother of another powerful character called Ravana. And the aerial Vimana is said to resemble a chariot, a bright cloud in the sky. Very interesting things, these ancient Vimanas. I have a clip here, and I'm going to switch to that clip, and you're going to hear probably, I think this is from the Ancient Alien show, talking about these ancient flying machines. Very well could have been the people of India trying to describe the ancient flying machines of Atlantis and Lemuria. So let's listen. Just a second, folks. It takes some of these clips. They'll have little dead spots in them. I don't know why. Or sometimes the software that plays these clips will take a second to actually initialize. That's probably my bad. Hopefully it's not going to crash here. Nothing like live radio. We'll just let that spin for a little bit. It's very interesting. Some of the Vimanas were said to almost be like jet engines. And we're talking about they would scare the animals. And they're also, it discusses these weapon systems.
By some jet engine.
Here we go.
This seems to be true because all the description of the flight behavior, elephants ran away in panic. grass was thrown out because there was a lot of pressure from behind those vimanas. So that we can say this is a description of the spaceship.
Although mainstream historians believe the Vimana texts are myths, many of the documents contain passages that seem to describe modern machinery and technology.
The Vimanika Shastra goes into metals that are used in these craft. It talks about electricity and power sources. It talks about the pilots and the clothing they have to wear. It talks about the food that they eat. It talks even about the weapons that are kept on these airships.
The flight manuals of the Vimanas are quite similar to the flight manuals you find in the modern passenger flight business, or when you go to the military jet engines. Of course, they have also flight manuals because it's necessary for a pilot to get knowledge about his plane he wanted to fly with.
We also learn that these Vimanas could be controlled mentally. And this is a technology that modern militaries are beginning to develop.
Even today, with as advanced as we think we are, almost every manifestation of an actual extraterrestrial civilization today would look almost like magic to us, where it has to do with technological electromagnetic systems that interface with coherent thought and organized thought. And this gets into people go, wow, now you're losing me here. But I tell people, I said, yeah, well, you got to push your boundaries a little bit if you're talking about a true interstellar civilization.
The Vimanika Shastra, or science of aeronautics, indicates Vimanas used a propulsion system based on a combination of gyroscopes, electricity, and mercury. Is this possible?
Mercury is an unusual element. Mercury is metal. It's also a liquid. And it's a conductor of electricity. Now, there's unusual things you can do with mercury. You can put it into a closed gyroscopic device with mercury spinning around, and then you can electrify it. And studies have been done on this by NASA and by other scientists, and they find that you have levitation effects, anti-gravity kind of effects, and a spinning bright light is part of it too.
The Vimanika Shastra suggests Vimanas were powered by several gyroscopes placed inside a sealed liquid mercury vortex.
Here's an example of a little kid's gyroscope. You spin it with a heavy wheel around a central axis. Well, a gyroscope seems to do a lot of strange things, even defy gravity. And it does this because it uses what's called rotational or angular momentum.
Angular momentum. That's one of the interesting. Sorry about that. I'm trying to get my microphone switched back here. Angular momentum is what causes the Coriolis effect, and this rotation creates this anti-gravity effect. And when you get into anti-gravity, sometimes you also create a time field, which is extremely advanced technology. And that's one of the things that I think has confused our historians so much is we have these, for example, these incredible structures called the Great Pyramid. And these monolithic structures are all over our planet because they were left behind by a great civilization that destroyed itself. And there was a civilization before that that destroyed itself. There was a great war about 150,000 years ago, I think it was, under the rulership of Pelagon. Pelagon came around 150,000 years ago from off-world, and he brought with him about 70,000 human beings. And he had 200 very good scientists with him. He was the leader of this society, he was a very benevolent man. He was called an Ishwish. Now, there are 7 evolutionary steps that human beings can go through. This 5th stage of human life is life in what's called creational wisdom. And people that get to this level, and supposedly we all do, which is another astonishing thing. You know, there are certain aspects with the Maya material you just have to let sink in. And slowly it does. But anyway, eventually we all get to this level called the Ishwish, which is a level where our material consciousness has incredible powers. Levitation, telepathy, telekinesis. And that's why I'm doing this show on the monstrous powers of our thoughts. You know that our thoughts, our knowledge, if it's correct, is such a monstrous power. It will continually bring into effect, into reality, everything that the human being desires. Now, the problem is your unconscious thoughts can bring in things that you don't really want. But learning to control these thoughts is so important. And there were these people from the past, these leaders, people like Pelagon, who had learned to control their thoughts to such a level. He was seen at times, they said, levitating above the ground. He was supposed to be able to make plants grow with his mind. And he was very benevolent. The people that were living on Earth at the time, they called him a god. And this is probably where the term God came from here on the Earth. He was a very benevolent leader. And he built up a whole society that covered that whole Earth, great cities and inhabitants, all of the Earth. And it flourished. This was 2 civilizations back. You know, you could think of us as the 3rd civilization. There probably were others. And this great civilization, the Pelagon, flourished for some 10,000 years. Everything ran well until Pelagon died. And then another man took leadership who wasn't such a benevolent leader. And anyway, the whole thing fell apart. So let me read here from Contact 59. It's quite interesting. But before the 10,000 years were finished by the desires for power of saying my thirsty people, unsatisfactions once more again rose. Didn't I say, wasn't I talking about unsatisfaction and the incredible problems that can lead to? Anyway, the unsatisfactions rose up again, leading to deadly wars, and it caused the whole earth to tremble in a wild war crying. This is Colonel Wendell Stevens' translation. It may not be the best. And what happened was an earthly world war. And it says, a measure like never before until today was brought upon the earth. Everything without exception was damaged or destroyed. And only a few thousand people survived this immense catastrophe. So this was a world war that took place about 140,000 years ago. The earth has been through a lot. And we've had, according to Maya material, we've had these ancient civilizations on the earth. And they wiped themselves out. They just completely wiped themselves out. It says, but these few escaped in good long-distance spaceships out into the cosmos, and they settled on some strange world. And only a very small remainder remained back on the earth, and they degenerated completely. And this is one of the things that's brought up in the Maya material, is that the people that are left behind a lot of times go into a degenerated state. That means they lost their skills of the material consciousness, they lost their telepathy and the telekinesis, and they lost their great knowledge, and they lost their wisdom, and they lost their technologies. And that's where we're headed if we don't turn around. We're going to end up destroying ourselves again. Anyway, the people that were remaining back on the earth, they degenerated completely. And about 7,000 years later, the distant descendants of the people that escaped the great warrior in the time of Pelagon, they came back to the earth. And that was the people that found Atlantis and Lemuria. They only found wild and degenerated beings here. because the people that remain, they lost their civilization, they lost their knowledge, and they went back to the most devastating form of primitive living. And that's what it talks about in the Goblet of Truth. If we don't get a handle on our overpopulation, if we don't get a handle on all the other crises that are going on, if we don't get a handle on controlling our thoughts, we could end up in a civilization that's degenerated again. Anyway, the return of these escaped people came. And it's interesting, these leaders, they use the word God for these leaders. So our religions have kind of confused this term. Again, really the term God always referred to these highly evolved men who came from off-world most of all the time. And they had tremendous technologies, tremendous powers of the material consciousness. Greater Atlantis and Mu were the two biggest cities ever built on Earth. And for the sake of maintaining the peace, they were developed on two different continents. And again, a high culture developed, and everything began to flourish. This was about 130,000 years ago. And again, the scientists kind of rose up again and started stirring up trouble. Anyway, it's a story I've told many times about the great destruction of Atlantis and Lemuria. The leader of the one scientist that started the trouble was a man named Eris the Barbarian. Now, and I was reading in the Goblet of Truth today, and it talks about if we're a person that goes into a state of, as what they call it, they call it Gewalt, for a brutal kind of degeneracy, brutality that's worse than normal brutality. And then Asgartit means to get out of the control of the human nature. And when we get into this state, we dump dopamine into our system, which is kind of a natural high. And these people, these barbarians, if you will, Eris the Barbarian, they sometimes become addicted to their own endorphins, and they feel powerful, and they do exercise great power, and they become brutal. They fall into a rage. Eris was a scientist of extraordinary bestial mind. He also had an overpowering force about him, and what he did first was conquer Hyperborea, which is the area to the north. And the Thule Society in Germany knew about Hyperborea. And the Thule Society, the Thule or the Thule Society, started in Munich, I believe. And they knew about this mythical northern country. Now, we, in the Meyer material, we call it Hyperborea. It's really a very confusing situation in some ways, because the Thule Society was a German study group. It was headed up by Walter Nauhaus. And they were all focused on the origins of the Aryan race. And there was some truth to that. There were Aryan people that were alive at this time. But, of course, it was a strange racial thing that the Nazis had that was distorted all out of proportion. Ultima Thule was said to be, by the Nazi mystics, the capital of the ancient Hyperborea, which they thought was in Greenland or Iceland, because that's where the north is now. But we had a pole shift after this great war of Atlantis and Lemuria. So Florida used to be up there. So if you want to go to Hyperborea, you should really go to Florida, which doesn't really make much sense in that sense. So it's very interesting, all of this history and how it all points back to our thoughts and learning to control our thoughts. And when these peoples in ancient times, when they developed these incredible abilities of their material consciousness, it was because they had learned to control their thinking to a degree. Now, unfortunately, people like Eris the Barbarian, who did conquer Hyperborea, and his son went down and conquered India and Pakistan, and these two eventually stirred up the great war between Atlantis and Lemuria. Can you imagine if Atlantis hadn't fallen, if they'd never had that war, if they'd lasted 130,000 years and now we were alive during, you know, can you imagine the technology we would have? We would be living, and it would be beyond our wildest imagination. So that's, I mean, we really are at the point now where we could fall into the same trap that Pelagon's civilization fell into, that Atlantis and Lemuria fell into, and we could destroy ourselves. That's what we're on the precipice again, and that's why it's so important to be able to control your thinking, because being able to control your thinking is really what's going to allow you to have happiness in life. You know that good, positive thoughts lead to good feelings, which lead to good habits, which lead to good circumstances in your life. And you should have both external and internal growth that are in balance. And if you're in balance, you'll be like a tree that has good roots and a good branch system, because the part which cannot be seen is the roots, which stabilize the tree. And the same way with the spiritual life, is a good spiritual life, a good thought process, being able to control your thoughts will stabilize your life. Now, unfortunately, we are a people that are ill in their consciousness. And that's what this book is dedicated to helping the people of the earth who are currently ill in their consciousness. And we have to learn to think independently again, because that's the only way our consciousness will evolve. And it says in the book, in the Might of Thoughts, it says, but thinking is more and more stunted on our planet because we live in a consumer society in which everything is pre-chewed by the television, the radio, the newspapers, the magazines, the books. And people think they have no reason to think for themselves anymore. So they just align their thinking with the masses, and they go right along. And it's very sad, because there are a lot of casualties. And there are very many casualties to this in all ages. And you probably have knowing of someone whose life is out of control. And we all struggle with keeping our lives under control at times. Billy's second mentor was a woman from the Tao universe. And she had, in the Ask It Explanations Part 5, she said, the human is still not capable of coping with and fully understanding the truth. And he is not yet mature enough to know his future and to approach it correctly. For this reason, much of the Meyer material is written down prophetically so that we can start to think independently, so we can start for ourselves to find and recognize the truth. Now, I talked about a sartang earlier, which means to get very bad, out of control of good human nature, and gewalt, which is a kind of brutal brutality, if I could say that. It's a very incredible brutality. And that's what happened during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria, when Eris the Barbarian stirred up all these people into war. And it led to a disaster that almost destroyed the whole planet. But we should be neutral positive in our thinking. And we need to repair our psyche. You should learn to meditate. You should spend time in nature. You should listen to music that's peaceful and relaxing. You should do everything in your power to nurture these healthy thoughts, because that which the human being mindfully thinks manifests, just like a plant sprouts from a seed and therefore can come into existence. Everything springs forth from the might of our thoughts. So we are the master of our own destiny. You are the master of your own destiny. You can create good circumstances in your life, but you have to learn to clarify your thoughts. You have to put effort into it. You have to practice. You have to have patience. If you do all this, you'll have a harmonious life. Remember, to clarify your thoughts, you repeat them, you reinforce concepts, you distraught, you bring distinction between things. Confusion is when things start to blur together. But you want to clarify your thoughts. And then if you do, the thoughts become more productive, more powerful, you'll form a harmonious life. And that's what we're studying this book for, because your consciousness is like a garden. And if it is not correctly maintained, you'll have wildly growing, repeating thoughts, which is where we started all of this tonight, talking about this automatic thinking. And automatic thinking is one of the biggest problems we face. We tend to narrow our frame of reference, and we focus on certain thoughts over and over again, and we need to break that cycle. Problem-causing thoughts and the feelings which arise from them operate automatically, and they throw your psyche into a turmoil. And a lot of times, we're unconsciously tending and nurturing these wrong thoughts. It is the automatic thoughts which are a crucial point, because it is through them that the feelings are disturbed. And when your thoughts don't match your feelings, that's when you start to go into real psychic disturbance. Anyway, I'm going to end the show out here by playing some of the sounds of nature. And, you know, there's nothing better for repairing your psyche than the sounds of nature. I appreciate everyone listening this evening.